For instance, you remember in the other one, there was a debate amongst ourselves about ratification and accession and so on. It was nicely clarified last year. So there was all those things. We must not have the basics. What are these things? What belongs to the executive and so on? Some of them are going to be contested, and we must not think that it's going to be easy, because they were used to a particular process of dealing with this matter. But constitutionally and legally, they were supposed to go a particular route. So hence then, we go into these committees, and our counterpart in the NCOP, and try and bring the political office bearers on board, we think it's going to work. In fact, ultimately, Babu Skhosana is correct. Ultimately, that lies in the office of the Speaker, because it must involve everybody. Every parliamentarian must understand the implications of this and how to process them. Currently, we don't even know how to process them until there was this input. We're just sitting in the... And that's why I was saying, in this process, we're learning some of the things and trying to improve and make this parliament a real activist parliament. And don't think that it's just going to be easy. Somewhere the battle is going to be bruising, because some people would feel that we're going into our terrain and so on and so on and so on. But as long as we have a clear understanding and we're able to put everybody on board, in relation to the specific questions, I will allow you to respond. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Before my sister respond, the other questions are political explosives. One would want to get into them most before they do. My honorable brother came out with a question on the attachment of property of Zimbabwe in the agreement. Now, what I want to know is, was the Parliament of Zimbabwe part of the agreement, the attachment of the property? Because you see, this demonstrates the problem we're having of finding agreements which have not been processed by Parliament. You see, that is why the Zimbabwean Parliament would not recognize that agreement, because they were not party to that. So if South Africa is party to that, it would do it with the SADC and others. If the Parliament of Zimbabwe would resist, because they're not party to that. And I'm sure in international law, they would still win the right thing. I don't know, but I think you've been answered about this issue of recalling some of the treaties and the agreements which have not been. I agree, if we have those, then let's recall them. We could integrate them in the exercise of the workshop. I mean, we could use those agreements and treaties as case studies in the workshop exercise, and then we could come out with recommendations that then we'll go to the speaker from there. The point about the House Chair on international relations, I think we're playing that role. I was simply bringing the centrality of the speaker in the whole thing, because at the end of the day, the speaker would have to appoint somebody to do that work. But although she's there, let's hope the speaker will say, that is your responsibility. But now this comes to what I think I'm more comfortable with saying my sister there. What my sister has recommended, that we need to have some kind of a joint standing committee. It could comprise of the chairpersons of all the different portfolio committees, but it becomes a joint standing committee on treaties and agreements. Now, that then would be the responsibility of the House Chair. And then the Speaker would be the one communicating more closely with that, because it deals with the institution. And I hope it would also transfer a lot of problems from our chair here to them, because when it gets to the level, then questions of authority are being asked by other chairpersons, what authority are you bringing here? Because we know you reach the international relations. So why are you telling us about this meeting? Why are you calling us? Why are you summoning us? What's wrong with you? So it would transfer some powers away from you. No, I was saying on this issue of the separation of powers that ministers took it upon themselves to deal with the treaties and agreements. Not because they were doing wrong. It was simply the principle of the separation of powers that we didn't see that these things must end in Parliament. When I was a minister, as other people don't know, I was. When I was a minister, I signed a lot of agreements with some organizations in the state about the prison system, with the universities in the state about the prison system. The private systems which were built in South Africa, I signed agreements with some organizations in Britain, but Parliament had nothing to do with that except the report that I was bringing. The administration of the executive or department was dealing with it. Agreements that I signed with overseas organizations and also with other prison systems in Africa. But we were doing those things within the parameters of the Constitution, as you were saying, that some of the things ought to be, they don't have to be repugnant to the Constitution of the land or in conflict with the laws of the land, as long as they were in there. They went through Parliament. The Parliament was simply looking at what is not in conflict with the Constitution, that is all. Not all these points that she's bringing in, which are very points now that the treaty has to look at the interest of the entire nation, not just a section there of the prison. Thank you. Yes, Usman.
Thank you, Chair. Some of the political questions have been answered. Yes, thank you very much. Yes, and then on the issue of Obama Kutana also on the picture of the Mawai issue, except to say the other important principle in treaties between nations is what we call pacta sunt servanda in the African. What it means is in good faith. So most of this, the tribunals within SADC, within AU, within any other organization, they issue awards which have no legal, are not legally binding, but they are advisory, and members are expected, once they are part, what Babakotana was saying, once they are part and parcel of that decision, they are bound by that decision. Otherwise, they are expected to implement them on the state, in the state. So that's where the whole lot of struggle going on there, but everything else is based on the state, but the most important thing is to be part of the state, and I want. So I'll pass on to sanctions. I mean, to the old treaties in AU and all the ones which came from the old AU. Actually, all the treaties which were entered into force or formulated during the old AU period became AU treaties. Okay. And according to the so what we have been battling with is trying to see which ones are not applicable anymore and which ones are going to still be workable. So there are those treaties which are outdated now within the which came from the old AU, which are now part of the AU but have since lost their mandate. So these are the treaties which states are looking into now. I think the department, when it comes there, will ask them, request them to also give information on that. Because there have been a few meetings by lawyers from member states looking at this package of treaties which are of no use now to say what are they doing about it. So that's one of the take on board. And then there was a question, mainly comments from Honorable Gordon Hoff, which I think has already been answered on the backlog. But then one other issue, the international law issue, which the Honorable Member raised, is on approval by Parliament of both states. That is important. Hence, the importance of the committee having relations, working relations with sister committees in our country for issues which are of immediate interest to the country, national interest. Like the EU, if we have issues on IPA, we must have relations with the EU Parliament to be able to discuss that immediately. Because there are those treaties which have a provision saying it will enter into force on a ratification or after all constitutional requirements have been followed. So it depends on what constitutional requirements are in that country, which they still need to follow in order for that treaty to enter into force. So it's for the interest of the committee to make sure that those constitutional requirements are actually followed by the counterpart countries, because otherwise the people will not enter into force which has been ratified by one member. And now on what Honorable Mohalapo was asking to say self-executing treaties, I mean clauses in a treaty, what it means. Maybe I should also say much of the constitution that we talk about that, but there are self-executing treaties as well. Now we are talking about clauses. But there are treaties which are self-executing, meaning treaties which will apply to South Africa without having to be, you know, introduced by an act of parliament. For example, the UN Charter, the African Union Constitutive, you know, it's things like that which automatically becomes part of our jurisdiction, much as we didn't have an act of parliament to see, but those are self. But the constitution now, for the purposes of our, of the role of parliament, is regard to treaties. Section 231, subsection 4, actually relates to self-executing clauses within a treaty, which is something which is a very serious thing if it can go through without being noted, that there is such a clause within a treaty. Like the example I was giving, that, for example, that treaty on rights of women says women can should also be allowed to be priests and to be rulers of countries. So a country which doesn't have that kind of tradition, it's a problem, it's a conflict. So that treaty will be applicable once they've ratified it together with that self-executing clause. But then the danger of the self-executing clauses is that they apply even before the treaty is ratified. That's the catch. Once it has been signed, it doesn't need it doesn't need national law for it to apply in South Africa. There's a difference. A treaty will be signed, Parliament will approve it, the Department issues an instrument of ratification to say South Africa agrees to be bound now. Then that treaty ends there, according to the Constitution, because the Constitution says Article 231, it says once the treaty has been ratified, then it must become, to in order for it to apply to South Africa, it must be nationalized, it must be domesticated, it must form part of our law through an act of parliament. So treaty comes to parliament twice at two very important levels for now, before we the committee will argue for the first phase. So when it comes here for approval, for ratification, it's a different thing for it coming back now as an act of parliament, as a bill, which now domesticates the treaty. So at those two levels, that's why I was suggesting that the committee's first reaction to the treaty, if it does have concerns, they should be in writing, so that when this treaty now comes back as a bill, those concerns would have to be taken into consideration, because the committee should remember that when a bill comes, when a treaty comes now as a bill in parliament, the country has all the power to change and play around with the process of the treaty, not to change the treaty, but to make the treaty adapt to the situation at home. Yes, without changing the treaty, but you can change the effect. Yes, within the act. So if the committee didn't take that advantage, I mean that opportunity before, while the treaty was here for discussion, that becomes a bit of a problem. You'll find a lot of resistance from executive. So then self-executing clauses are like that. They will apply to South Africa even before an act of parliament, which makes a treaty binding on South Africa before it's done. That's the catch. So that is why it's very important to make sure that at least self-executing treaties processes are identified. In some jurisdictions, for example, in Australia and in Canada, Parliament has stood up and said no more treaties with self-executing clauses, because of the implications at times that they bring, because Parliament can do absolutely little on issues like that, but that is something for the future. Then I'll end up. Then the veto powers. Whether the houses have veto powers, the committee actually, whether the committee has veto powers. What happens is if in terms of veto powers of this committee over other committees, in terms of the rules, when a treaty is referred to the other committee, like let's say in the committee of justice, PC on justice, it does have an instruction maybe to say the committee must confer with the PC on international relations, but the PC on justice is the one that has to consider and report on the instrument. So then it means, although the rules are silent on the actual, whether the committee has veto powers, but it says that the committee that has been instructed to report on that agreement is the one that has to recommend to the House for approval or rejection. So it means the committee has no veto power on other committees in terms of the rule 302. Okay. And then on the point of who ratifies, Honorable Sundusa, the practical procedure is that Parliament approves for executive to ratify. This is if we talk legalistically.
Because what happens is Parliament approves and recommends for ratification. But the instrument, the actual instrument of ratification, is issued by the executive. This means, you know, in our language, common daily language, we say Parliament ratifies. This brings about a point of departure from other jurisdictions where you'll find that, like in Botswana, for example, once the president has signed and ratified, you know, it's one process in Botswana. South Africa, most of the Commonwealth countries, it's the same. The Parliament is just there for information. South Africa is one exceptional, you know, amongst the Commonwealth countries, except Canada and some. Britain, the same thing. Parliament just, yes, they are just informed about treaties. It's for information. So South Africa is doing, you know, we are one amongst the best democracies. Hence, we have to, yes, hence we need to enhance oversight over treaties because it's one, you know, unique situation from what the Commonwealth is doing. So, that is what happens. The committee approves for the executive to issue the instrument of ratification. So, in essence, the Parliament ratifies treaties because that's what you know. You'll find people saying that in South Africa, Parliament ratifies. It's fine. Then technical agreements, executive agreements, administrative agreements, yes, they bind South Africa without having to come to Parliament for ratification. These are the agreements which will have a clause to say this agreement will enter into force on signature. There are many of them. The reason being, international law and diplomacy allows space for the executive to do its work without necessarily having to maybe involve Parliament at each and every aspect. For example, a treaty with Angola, for example, on issues relating to oil. The Minister of Mines and Minerals with his or her counterpart can agree, can have a technical agreement or an administrative agreement or executive agreement to say how now companies in South Africa will work with companies in Angola to actually now do the details, day-to-day implementation of the agreement, how often they will need, how many barrels of oil a year will be transferred to South Africa, and how much South Africa is going to pay, you know, things like that. They cannot come to Parliament. These are executive prerogatives. They are trusted to do that by the Constitution. But there is a role for Parliament because when they bring annual reports, that's when Parliament can pick it up if there is something which is not proper. One last two issues, Chairperson, which I think listening to interventions by members, I think we may just bring up. It's the issue of time frames. I think the committee will think of what time frames it will save, you know, for consideration of international agreements, because this has been a problem. And it's not in the rules, so it's something that can be looked into to say this is how much time Parliament will need, so that the departments are able to fit in into the schedule without having to be asked, or you know, some time frame which the committee can do. Another element which hasn't been introduced, I think, which the committee can also consider is the issue of public participation on treaties. That issue of wines, partly because there was no public participation before the treaty was ratified. So our time frame maybe can accommodate even time, depending on the issue. If it's something which is urgent, Parliament wouldn't want to maybe delay the country from benefiting from. But the issue of some kind of public participation on treaties, it hasn't been done. So just like legislation, when legislation comes to Parliament, there is that space for public participation. Why not on international agreements? Thank you.
Based on your own inputs, as honorable members, this is what I'm picking up. I'm trying to summarize. You are saying we're on the right path on this discussion and even the planned ones in terms of the coming workshops. It's clear that this issue of international treaties is a very important program of the committee. But the stakeholders are beyond us. So even when we treat it, we must just know that. The coming workshop is to make us understand these issues even deeper and the processes. And I want to appeal to the members. You can miss all the other meetings, but not that workshop. Not that workshop. Otherwise, you'll get lost. You'll keep on asking a lot of questions about this treaty because you don't understand the process, which might have explained to us, and then we take positions and so on. It's going to be very important. And I hope it would appeal even to COPE to be here, UDM to be here. We'll appeal to all of them, both groups. What is clear, colleagues, is that there are different elements of this workshop. You can't do everything at once. It's a very engaging process, but we must be patient. For instance, I think it's clear. It says, "What are these treaties? What Mabus Kosana called the basics? What is the role of the Parliament vis-à-vis the role of the executive? Because there are things for the executive. There are things for the, so we must not think that we would want everything to come to us." The Constitution is very clear what comes to us. Once we know the rule, what are the obligations for both structures on how to deal with these issues? And we've been talking about processing these issues. How are we going to be processing these issues? But very important, as we process them, how do we evaluate them against what we call the national interest? The question of the national interest is a workshop on its own. We have agreed that we must go into such a workshop. That on its own, it's a big workshop. And we have said it's going to be even part of our public diplomacy when we talk about national interest. Also, Honorable Korenoff is saying we need to examine what has been signed, what has been ratified, what has not been ratified. So we must take stock of what is there. You talk about the backlogs and how we're going to deal with them. That's going to be very important, how you deal with those backlogs. But you can only do that once you have taken stock. So one of the presentations by the department is going to be this issue, them giving us what is there, what they've signed, and so on and so on. But also I've added the issue of coordination at three levels of government and between the departments, laterally and horizontally. That coordination is going to be very important. And coincidentally, Wabusko Sana, that document which I looked at, the role to coordinate other departments on these things, international work was given to IDICO. So we might not be poaching into other people's territories that much, but we need to make them comfortable that we join partners here. We're suggesting a process. Then how do we ensure that every member, not just every chair of parliament, understands this? Because it's the responsibility of parliament. So parliament is its members. How do we ensure that? Which means these workshops must be taken beyond these committees we have identified to the chairpersons and the whips and then to the members and so on. There must be a clear, and I think you're right, Honorable Skosani. That's where the other high offices then must come and just be central and play their role, because we must empower everybody if we really want to talk about an activist parliament. I think this bringing everybody to what we'd call the basics is going to be very important, so that people are able to evaluate a policy. We don't just become like rubber stamps because it has been put to us. We must have the tools to analyze it, whether it's taking us on, it's taking our interest on board. This will all, help all of us to also agree as parliament and the executive on what I would call the processes, the procedures, and even time frames which must be followed when we deal with these issues. Like we must say, once you have heard this, the presentation last week was even saying when people go to a discussion like in the WTO for negotiations, they're supposed to be moving there with a framework from Parliament, not just on their own. That's what the presentation was saying. The framework itself must be approved by Parliament. So you can see that there's a lot. And then we must agree then, once you have such a thing, negotiations have been concluded, they've agreed, what would be the time frame? Not this thing that we must come and ratify something which was done in 2007 or in 2005, 2 years or 3 years down the line. We must just agree on all those processes. But this suggests then that the fourth, it's one of our major, workshops. But after that, there is likely to be a series of two or three workshops to refine certain things and so on. That is how I summarize this. We've put that forth and we've said tentatively is the fourth. Oh, because we might revert back to the second. We want to guarantee that we get these political office bearers. We want them. I would allow for the closing remarks before we go into another item. Honorable Korenov, who else wants to have a last bite?
Chairperson, I agree with you. Can I add one element?
Yes.
In 2008, with the IPU conference here in this parliament, a parliament visited this parliament, and they established the wish to establish a link between the parliaments to discuss issues of mutual concern between the two parliaments. Since then, and it was approved by the Minister of then Foreign Affairs of South Africa and the Foreign Minister of Foreign Affairs of the other country. Since 2008, nothing has happened. I don't know whether there are other similar agreements or proposals to establish links between two parliaments. I only know of this one, that we on the fourth we also put as a discussion whether there are similar agreements that's not been formed between the parliaments, or whether they've been formed and not adhered to, or whether it's only one case. It's Argentina. But it was approved by the two ministers of foreign affairs. So it's not another committee than this committee to discuss that and to see whether it's valid or not.
Let's clarify this.
maybe as part of that workshop or one of the workshops, we must go back to the clarification. Because you see, part of the problem was that international relations prior was conducted through the PGIR. Now it has been separated. We're dealing with policy issues, parliament to parliament relations. That's what is at the level of the Speaker and the House Chair. That's the issue which you're talking about. Maybe one of the workshops must deal with that particular issue. But we, it's the department and the executive, that's what we monitor. But parliament to parliament does not belong to this committee. But, of course, we can request further clarification there. At this stage, I would say we pass up this item, we move into the announcements. The announcements I have are as follows. We have applied for ZIM from the 19th to the 23rd July. In principle, there was no problem, but we're still waiting for the paperwork from their side to sign. You know, these parliamentary things then can be told that no. Not everybody can go now, a lot of people and so on. But we have applied for 7. If it's for 7, clearly we will have 4 from the ANC, 1 DA, 1 COPE, and 1 IFP. The implication, colleagues, as much as it's oversight, would have loved all of us to be there. Once you take the whole committee outside, you sit with a problem of you will come back with no budget. There's nothing you'd be able to do. And I can tell you that we're trying by all means that before the end of the year, we have another oversight at the AU. At the AU, where we can be able to deal with even with the missions around. But the target now, as we had indicated, is multilateral are very interesting. So we're already putting that for a proposal. And to coincide with certain activities there, it might be good because you say you're hitting two birds with one stone. It will be the multilateral institution, which is the AU itself, and also a few missions around. And maybe take some of you to Somalia. Yes. No, you must go to the parliament. On the 26th, it's Western Cape. Remember that program. 26th. July. On the 27th to the 30th, Limpopo. I want those dates. You jot them down. Second or the fourth is the workshop. That's the focus for now. Once all the paperwork has been done, the staff members will come to you about the names as the different parties. That summary and those announcements moved by Honorable Dad and seconded by Honorable Sunduza, that they are okay. Thank you. Yes, it's just for your own information, so that you just look at it. Maybe one day you might, you see, maybe when we go to the AU, we might have to deal with that. For instance, one of the things, when we give you some of these things, you know, during our visit on the 19th to ZIM, on the 20th, I think there's a big summit of the head of state in Zambia. Yes. Yes. So even if you had wanted to see Uncle Bob, you won't see. But your parliament, you are going to another parliament to meet your counterparts. Okay. He's very hot. He wants to meet Uncle Popri. Can we agree that we stand a chance?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.